I want to speak about a few inyanim from the Sedra, but they all have one theme. So we'll start with a few questions, and as we answer each one, we'll add a little bit more to the theme itself. Start with the first pasuk in the Sedra. Vayetze Yaakov miBeersheva vayelech Haran. So Rashi points out, Chazal, that it could have just said, Vayelech Yaakov Haran. If I know he was in Beersheva, and he went to Haran, he must have left Beersheva. Why did I have to mention Vayetze Yaakov? Malamed, say Chazal, Shaziva Tzadik min Hamakom Osaroshim. When a tzaddik leaves a place, it makes an impression. She calls man shat tzaddik be'ir, hu ziva, hu hoda, hu hadora. As long as the tzaddik is in the city, he's the light and the glory and the beauty of the city. And the Maral explains, the light is Torah. He enlightens the people with Torah. And the beauty is the beauty of midos tovos. And the glory is the glory of mitzvahs. That's what a tzaddik adds to the city, mitzvahs and midos and Torah. Ponat Ozav Tzadik Es HaMokom, when Tzadik leaves the place, Ponat Ziva, Ponat Hoda, Ponat Hadora. So all of the light and the glory and the beauty leave with him. My question on this is the Lashon, the terminology Rashi uses to describe this phenomenon. If you would ask me, Rashi should have said, Aziva Tzadik Min HaMokom Mechasa Roshem. When a tzaddik leaves a place, it takes away an impression. It doesn't make an impression. It takes away something that's there. It's not a positive impression. It just takes away what's there. It's a negative thing. So why does Rashi say osaroshem, which sounds to be something positive, when it's really just taking away the positive, it leaves a negative? Second question. It says, next pasuk, Vayifka b'mokom, vayolen shom kivo hashemesh, vayishka b'mokom ahu. Yaakov Avinu set himself down to sleep that night, in that place. And Chazal learned from that, that 14 years when he learned by Shem and Aver, or by Aver, Shem was already dead, so it's yeshiva of Aver, he didn't sleep for 14 years. Now that doesn't mean he didn't sleep at all, because that's humanly impossible. Because if a person makes a shvua that he won't sleep for 3 days, you give him malchus and you tell him to go to sleep, because it's a shvua shav. It's a shvua in vain, because it's not something anybody could do. It's humanly impossible to stay up for 3 days straight without dozing off. So what does it mean that Yaakov Avinu didn't sleep for 14 years? It means he didn't prepare himself to go to sleep. He didn't go sleep in a bed. He learned by his table, by his shtender, and when he got tired, he dozed off, and as soon as he woke up, he started learning again. He never prepared himself, he never went to sleep for 14 years. Nope. Now he's running away from Esav. He's on the road, right? Another day, he'll be in the safety of Lavan's house, and tonight, he has to set a bed, puts the rocks down, tonight I'm going to go to sleep. Wait one more night. 14 years, he didn't go to sleep. One more night, doze against the tree and keep moving. No, tonight, vayishka v'mokamahu, what he didn't do for 14 years, he did that night. Why? Why did Yaakov Avinu have to sleep that night? Why couldn't he just doze off and keep moving? Another question. It says that Yaakov Avinu, where did he sleep that night? In the Mokam HaMikdash. Why? Because he said that the place where my forefathers davened, and I didn't daven there. So he passed by that place, and he didn't realize where he was going. And then he got almost to Haran, and he realized that he passed by the place, and he didn't daven there, and he wanted to go back. So the Rabban Shom either brought the mountain to him, according to some Rishonim, or they made him go back in the twinkling of an eye, Kvitzas HaDerech. Either the Derech came to him, or he traversed this in a second. Miracles. The Rabban Hashem avoids doing miracles as much as possible. Why did the Rabban Hashem wait till he got to Haran and decide to come back instead of tapping him on the shoulder when he passed by and said, you know, Yaakov, this is the place where your forefathers daven. Why don't you go daven? He wanted him to daven there, tell him, don't wait till he remembers and then have to do miracles. So let's start to give some answers, and in the course we will bring up some other topics from the Sedra that fit this same theme and enhance it. The Medrash says in Parshas Chayisara, Rabbi Akiva Hayadorish. I think we mentioned this Medrash, but I'm going to mention it now in the context that I want to mention it for now. Rabbi Akiva was giving a drasha and the Talmidim started to go to sleep. Nothing has changed in 2,000 years. And Rabbi Akiva wanted to wake him up. So he said, Marasa Esther, Shemolcha Me'evi Esther Mesheva Medinos. What did Esther see that enabled her to rule over 127 Medinos? Tavo Esther Basbita Shosara Shechoysa Me'evi Esther Mshana V'timlo Chal Me'evi Esther Mesheva Medinos. Let Esther, the great-great-granddaughter of Sari Menu, who lived 127 years, rule over 127 Medinos. So they all woke up. What in the world is there a connection between the 127 Medinos of Esther and the 127 years of Sar, except they're the same number? And Rabbi Akiva went on. Says the Michta Meliyahu, what was the intent of Rabbi Akiva? He said Rabbi Akiva surmised that the reason his Talmidim were not listening to him is because he was talking about levels that were way beyond them, madregos that were way above them. And they reasoned the following. Why should we listen to this? It has really no relevance to us. It's way above our head. So we'll get some rest now, and when Rabbi Akiva gets down to our level, we'll be well rested and be able to listen to him very nicely. So they decided to get a little rest while he was talking about things that there was no purpose for them to listen to. Rabbi Akiva told them, you're making a big mistake. Do you know how Esther was able to get the power to rule over 127 Medinos? Because her whole life she aspired to be like Sarah, who lived 127 years. Doesn't mean that 127 years passed over her. What it means, the Torah says, Shnei Chai Sarah, Kulam Shavim Latova. All of Sarah Imenu's years were equally for the good. That doesn't mean they equally were good, because they weren't. 90 years she was barren, 37 years she had children. Not the same good. The night she was dragged to Paro wasn't the same as the day they made Yitzchak's bris equally good. But it doesn't say they were equally good. It says they were equally for the good. You can't control the situations that come your way, but you can control how you relate to them. Sarah Imenu controlled every second of her life and channeled it for the good. That's the ultimate malchus. That's what royalty is. Total control. So Esther aspired towards that total control in her life. She didn't reach that level, but at least she was able to rule over 127 Medinos. Said Rabbi Akiva, if you don't have aspirations and goals and a longing for the highest levels, you'll never reach any level. And therefore, if you don't listen to me when I'm talking about levels that are beyond you, and you don't have an aspiration, when will come the time that I'll be able to reach those levels, then you'll never reach your own potential either. That was the message Rabbi Akiva was giving them. My Rosh Hashiva, Rav Gifter Zatzal, said that we find this idea in the following Gemaras. The Gemara says, Harotza l'hachkim yadrim. A person who wants to be a chacham should daven and position himself a little bit towards the south when he davens. Because the menorah was in the south, in the Mishkan, and the menorah is a symbol of wisdom, so south is a symbol of wisdom. So if you want to daven, you want to be a chacham, daven a little bit towards the south. Or another Gemara, similar. Man de boilem evi chassid. A person who wants to be a chassid should learn Pirkei Avos, the laws of nezikin, of damages, and the laws of brachas. So Rav Shiva asked the following question. He said, the Gemara doesn't waste a word. It speaks in the most concise way. Loshen Kitzara. Why didn't Chazal just say simply, Hayadrin Yachkim, if you daven to the south, you'll be a Chacham. Why did it have to give the preface, whoever wants to be a Chacham should daven to the south? Just tell me, if you daven to the south, you'll be a Chacham. Why did it have to say, whoever wants to be a Chassid, do X, Y, and Z? Just tell me, if you do X, Y, and Z, you'll be a Chassid. He said simply, because you can daven to the south 1,000 times a day. If you don't want to be a chacham, you'll never be a chacham. You can learn the Zikim, Pirkei Avos, and brachos your entire life. You'll never be a chassid unless you want to be a chassid. Everything starts with a desire, with an aspiration, with a longing. First you have to want. You want, then you'll be able to achieve. There are ways to achieve what you want. You don't want, then there's nothing to talk about. So everything starts with a ratzon, with an aspiration. And even Moshe Rabbeinu could not reach high levels unless he aspired towards them, and because he didn't reach a level that he could have reached. I'll tell you a Gemara. Before I tell you that, that's why simply we have Elio Rabba, every Jew has to say Mosai Yagiu Maisai Lamaisai Avosai Avrom Yitzchak Yaakov. Do we ever think that we're going to reach the level of Avrom Yitzchak Yaakov, that we have to say constantly, when am I going to reach the level of Avrom Yitzchak Yaakov? No. But if you don't aspire towards that level, you'll never reach your own level. What's the Gemara with Moshe Rabbeinu? The Gemara says in Brachas, Bishchus Vayaster Moshe Ponov Koran Or Ponov. One man, the Omer, says that in the Shchus that Moshe Rabbeinu covered his face out of modesty and humility when he confronted the Rabbanu Shalom by the burning bush, and God's glory was represented in that fire, so Moshe felt inadequate. He felt modest and humbled, and he couldn't look at the Shekhinah, so he covered his eyes. And in that Shchus of that humility and that modesty, later on his face shone with the glory of HaKadosh Baruch Hu after Matan Torah. He had to put on a mask. The other man, the Omer, says no, Moshe Rabbeinu was punished for covering his face. And later on, after the Chet HaEgel, he saw it was a ripe time to ask for things. The Rabbanu Shalom was in a good mood, Kibiyachol, was an Eis Ratzon. So he said to the Rabbanu Shalom, Hareini Nos Kvodecho, let me see your glory. And you know what God answered him? According to this man, the Omer, Kisharotzisi lo rotzisa, when I wanted to show you my glory, you didn't want to look. Akshav Sha'ata wrote, now you want to look. Ani Eneni wrote, so I don't want to show you. So he got punished. You didn't want to look then, you're not going to be able to look now. I have two questions. First of all, we rarely have a machlokas in Chazal, min akotza lakotza, from one extreme to the other. If you find such a machlokas, usually it's a question. How could that be? Or that you're not learning right. We usually have a machlokas. Somebody said he got rewarded. Somebody said he didn't get rewarded. Somebody says he got punished. Somebody said he didn't get punished. But somebody says he got rewarded for the same thing that the other one says he got punished. Too extreme. Beyond that, it doesn't sound like God. When I wanted to show you, you didn't want to look. Now you want to look? Tough luck. I don't want to show you. It sounds like a 6-year-old spite. It doesn't sound like God. The answer, I think, is the following. Everybody agrees that Moshe Rabbeinu was rewarded for covering his face. It was the proper thing to do. It was modest, it was humble, and he got rewarded that his face shone because of that. Nobody argues on that. The one who says he was punished is for something else, not for covering his face. Listen to what it says. What did the Rabbanu Shalom tell him? Kisharotzisi lo rotzisa. When I wanted to show you, you didn't want to look. Not that you didn't look, you shouldn't have looked. But from behind your hands, you should have been chalishing. When will come the day that I'll be able to look? When will I reach that level that I'll be able to look? But you didn't even want to look. It didn't bother you. And since you didn't aspire towards that level then, I can't show it to you now. You haven't reached it. You would have reached it had you aspired from it then. But since you didn't aspire to it then you're not on the level now to do it. Not only can you reach your potential if you aspire towards things, but sometimes a very strong will and strong aspiration can create new levels. Where do we find that? Last week, said Esav comes in and he finds out that his brother took his brachas. So he says to his father, you must have a bracha left for me. And Yitzchak says, I'm sorry, I gave him everything, there's no brachas left. And Esav begins to cry bitterly. And immediately Yitzchak gives him a slew of brachas that we're suffering from till today, that Esav got those brachas. The question is, where did he get the brachas from? 2 minutes before he told him, there are no more brachas, period. And now all of a sudden he found them. What, he found them in his back pocket? Where did they come from? Say the Bali Musar, there were no more brachas. But when Esav cried and he had a tremendous will and aspiration, and desire for those brachas, it created new brachas in the heaven. New potential that didn't exist before. So not only can you reach your potential by aspiring, and can't reach it if you don't aspire towards the greatest goals, you can even create new potential. Go beyond your potential. However, okay, so that answers, let's answer one thing at a time. That answers why HaKadosh Baruch Hu didn't stop Yaakov when he passed by the Har HaBayis and tell him to go daven. But when Yaakov realized that he didn't daven there, he had a tremendous desire to go back, then it was worth making miracles. Because God said, if you have the desire to daven there, it's worth moving mountains. But if you don't have the desire, then nothing's going to help. So until Yaakov had that desire to daven there, the Rabban Shalom didn't do anything. But once he had the desire, B'derech Shalom rotz aleilech molichin also. The way a person wants to go, that's the way they lead him. You have to want. Now, if you want for the good, then the Rabban Shalom will move mountains for you. But if you have no desire, you have no aspirations, you have no want, then what's going to be? Why did Yaakov Avinu sleep in that place? Chazal say that before a person dies, his neshama gives a scream that's heard misof ha'olam v'ad sofo, from one end of the world to the other. Says Reb Chaim Volozhiner, what's the neshama screaming about before death? He says, what happens right before a person dies, HaKadosh Baruch Hu shows him a split screen. On one side of the screen, he shows him what he could have been had he developed all his potential. On the other side, he shows him what he actually accomplished. And when the neshama sees the gulf between what it could have been and what it was, it gives a scream that goes, Misofa olam v'yad sofa. I want to add to that. The lashon is a little difficult. It should have said, Mirosh ha'olam v'yad sofa, from the beginning of the world to the end. What's from the end of the world to the end? Why does it say from the end to the end? There's a machlokus in the Gemara Megillah between Rav and Shmuel. One of them says that when it says in the Megillah, Hamolech Mehodu V'Akush, it describes Achashverosh's Malchus, his kingdom, from Kodu to Kush. That Hodu was at one end of the world and Kush was at the other end, and he ruled from one end of the world to the other. The other one says, no, Hodu and Kush are right next to each other. And just like Achashverosh ruled over Hodu and Kush, which are right under his thumb, so too he ruled over the whole world with the same iron fist. Says the Vilna Gaon, two questions. First of all, how can you sit in the Beis Medrash and argue where Hodu and Kush are? Get in a boat, get out a map, take out an atlas and find out. We're sitting here arguing, well, is New York next to California or not? Get a map, find out where New York is, where California is. Right? How can you sit in the Beis Medrash and argue over a fact? Secondly, we know that Elu ve'Elu Divrei Elokim Chayim, when Chazal argued, they're both right. How could they both be right? Either they're right next to each other or they're opposite ends of the world. Says the Vilna Gaon, no. The world is a globe. So on a globe, any two points are at the same time right next to each other on opposite ends of the world. Right? This building and the building next door are right next to each other, if you go that way. But if you go that way, you're not going to get to that building until you go around the whole world. So it depends on perspective. They're not arguing on fact. Fact is that any two points on a globe that are right next to each other are at opposite ends of the world. The question is perspective. What does the Megillah want to tell me? The quantity of Achashverosh's rule or the quality? And they're both right. Depends on perspective. With that, I want to say the following. Take any point in the world. And if you just leave it like that as an end point, it's a little point, nothing. But if you take that end point and divide it into two and make the top part a beginning and the bottom part an end, then every little point encompasses the whole world, because you're starting going away from that point and you won't come back to the point till you go around the whole world and get to the bottom of that point. So if you look at a point as an end in itself, that's all that remains, a point. If you look at it as a beginning and an end, it encompasses an entire world within it. Everybody is born with points of potential. If you look at those points as an end in itself, then it's nothing. It's just a little point. But if you develop it, you look at it as a beginning, and you have a tremendous desire to develop it to the end, then every point of potential is a world to itself. That's what the neshama screams. The neshama sees the potential it could have developed, but it never had the desire. And the mele, it remained just points. That's screaming, me sofo olam v'atsofo. It's screaming that it looked at these worlds of potential as ends in themselves and not as beginning and ends, where every potential point would be an entire world. That's what it means. So that's what happens before a person dies. Now, Chazal tell us that Shena, sleeping, is 1/60th of death. Echad mishishim b'misa. That doesn't mean that if you have 60 people sleeping in a room, a Kohen can't go into the room. Okay? It also doesn't mean if you sleep 60 times, you're gone. Right? So what does it mean? Whenever Chazal say that this is echad mishishim of this, it's a symbolic idea based on the laws of kashrus. In kashrus, the smallest amount that something can still maintain its identity and not be nullified is 1/60th. If it's less than 1/60th, it's bottom. If you have something usher that falls into 60 times or more than 60 times its volume, then under normal circumstances, mutter, it's bottom. But if it's 60 times or less volume, then it's not bottom. So something maintains its identity up till 60 times. Memela, anything that Chazal say, this is 1/60th of this, means this has in it the identity of that thing, in the smallest way. Meaning, sleep has in it an echo of the identity of death, in a small way. How so? What's death? Death is where a person's physical and spiritual sides separate completely, and that's it. It's inactive, it's a total separation. Sleep is a partial separation. The neshama doesn't separate, still there, but the neshama is more involved with the, what's it called, with the spiritual things, and the body is resting. So there's a qualitative separation between the neshama and the body during sleep, which is similar to the quantitative separation by death. When a person dreams, the majority of dreams are what a person is thinking about. Most dreams are a reflection of what you're thinking about, what's going on within you. We didn't need Freud to tell us that, right? And Freud, who was a sick person altogether, so he interpreted his dreams the way he would have thought about them himself. People interpret things the way that they would see them. But not everything in dreams has sexual overtones or whatever, but it's what's on a person's mind. And sometimes you can tell from your dreams what's on your mind, Taka. Yaakov Avinu had just spent 14 years learning in Yeshivas Aver. But without aspirations, he wasn't going to be able to survive in Lavan's house. He had to know what's on his mind. Is he satisfied where he is? Is he aspiring towards higher and higher goals? Because if you don't, you never reach anything and you lose what you have. So he bedafka went to sleep that night to see what's on his mind, to see what he's dreaming about. And what did he see in his dream? A ladder, sulam mutzav artzav arosho magia shomaima. He saw that what he's thinking about is angels. He's looking at the top of the ladder. He has tremendous aspirations. And there's yiridas, there's aliyahs, there's ups, there's downs. But he has tremendous aspirations. That's what his dreams are. In fact, a balabas in Miami, his name was Sal Kalchman, Zecher Tzadik Livrocha, once told me a nice vort. He said that Yaakov Avinu, before he came to Lavan, he dreamt of angels climbing ladders. And then when he was by Lavan for 14 years, he had a dream about spotted and speckled animals. And Yaakov said to himself, right, before I came here, I was dreaming about angels. And now I'm dreaming about animals. Time to go home. So a person can see what is on his mind, what his inner feelings are, his inner aspirations are by dreaming. That's why Yaakov had a dream that night. He had to sleep. Because just like before you die, they show you what finally you could have been and you were. When you go to sleep, you get a glimpse of that also. of what's going on within you. Now, that's all very nice, but I want to add a few other points to make this livable. Because very nice to aspire to the highest levels, but it could be meaningless if you don't do it properly, and it could even be negative and counterproductive. It's a very positive thing to aspire, but you have to do it right. Let's start with one idea. That idea is the following. That, tell a story. There was once a person who wanted very much to be a millionaire. But if he would just save as much as he could save from his job, he wouldn't be a millionaire for like 100 years. So that was out of the question. The only way he envisioned himself becoming a millionaire is by winning the lottery. So he used to daven every day, 3 times a day, at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, beg and cry, God, please let me win the lottery. Because if I win the lottery, only you're going to gain. Because I'm going to give half of it to tzedakah right away. The other half I'm going to use for Torah and mitzvahs. And I promise you I'll use my influence of being a millionaire in a good way. And please let me win the lottery. And every day, 3 times a day, for about 10 minutes at the end of Shemoneh Esrei, he begged and pleaded and cried, let me win the lottery. After 20 years, it's not a chazal, it's just a story. After 20 years, the malachim came to God. And they said, Rabbanu Shalom, we can't take this anymore. Every day we've got to listen to this guy beg and cry. Let me win the lottery. Right? What would be so terrible if this guy won the lottery? He sounds sincere. Why not let him win the lottery? And God said, I'd love to let him win the lottery. He never bought a ticket. You can want and want and want, but if you don't buy the ticket, you're not going to win the lottery. People can say, I want to be a Talmud Chacham. I want to know all of Shas. Have you ever read over a Sefer? No, but I really want to know all of Shas. Fine. So start today, right, with one Amid, and tomorrow another Amid, and in time you'll know all of Shas. But you're not going to know all of Shas just by wanting to do it. That's the idea that it says in the Medrash in this week's Sedra. The Medrash says, Chalomoseim shel tzadikim hein bashamayim vehein ba'aretz. The dreams of tzadikim are both in the heavens and the earth, whereas the dreams of Rishayim are neither in heaven or earth. Lo bashamayim velo ba'aretz. Why? Yaakov dreams, Sulam Mutzavartza Varosha Magia Shamayim. There's a ladder planted on the ground with its head in the skies. So his dream encompasses heaven and earth. Whereas Paro dreams in Parshas Miketz, Vihine Omid Alayor, standing on the water on the Nile. He was the first person who thought he could walk on water, but he only did in a dream. And not in the heavens, not on the earth, it's in the water. What does it mean? Tzaddikim have tremendous dreams. Their dreams are in the heavens. But they firmly plant the dream on the ground with a program. They have short-term goals. They have long-term, tremendous aspiration. But you have to put the ladder on the floor, firmly embedded in reality, and climb up one rung at a time towards your long-range goal, short-range goals as you go up. So a tzaddik's dreams are in the heavens, but they're also firmly based on the earth in reality, how to reach them. You have to buy the ticket. But Rishayim, they don't have lofty goals, not Bashamayim, and they don't have any program that's in reality. Everything's just wishy-washy, so they're on the water. But that's the dream of Yaakov Avinu, Sulam Mutzavartza, Varosha Magia Shamayim. You have to firmly plant your dreams into reality, into a ladder of how you're going to achieve it, a program of action. How are you going to achieve those long-range goals, right, on a short-term basis, rung after rung? There's something else that's important. And that will bring out with the following. Later on in the Sedra, Rachel Imenu is a barren, and she wants a child like anything. And she complains to Yaakov, you're not doing enough for me, and if I don't have a child, I'm going to die. And Yaakov rebukes her. What are you blaming me? It's the Rabbanu Shalom who didn't give you a child, not me. So finally, the Rabbanu Shalom gives Rachel that child. She names him Yosef for two reasons, the pasuk says. First, Osaf Hashem Escher Pasi, God took away my shame. Secondly, Yosef Li Hashem Ben Acher, I would like you to give me another one. Both of these reasons for the name are very problematic. First, let's take the most simple problematic one. Let's say you wanted something, you know, very, very much, and you asked your parents to buy it for you, and they refused, okay? And you begged them, and you begged them, and you begged them, and finally, right, they can't take it anymore, so they say, okay, okay, we'll get you what you want. And they give it to you, and your reaction is, can I have another one? I'll take two. What kind of ridiculous thing is that? That is the most chazerish way, right, of reacting. That's not nice. Say thank you. Tomorrow ask for another one. Not today. That's not the reaction when finally you get what you've been wanting for so long. I'll take two. I'll take another one. Isn't that what Rachel said? Yosef li Hashem ben acher. I'd like another one. Well, you'd like another one. Thank you for this one. And the other net reason also, very difficult, the way Rashi brings it down. Osaf Hashem escher posi, Rashi says one pshat, until now people said I was not fit to be one of the mothers of Klal Yisrael. And now, Baruch Hashem, I have a shevet, I am fit. That's for sure, makes sense. Took away my shame, was a tremendous shame, inner shame. Maybe she wasn't sure, maybe Taka was something wrong with her. But Rashi says another pshat. The other pshat's like this. Rachel said, until now, whenever I broke a plate in the kitchen, or I ate a cookie from the cookie jar, people blame me. How come she's breaking plates? How come she's stealing cookies? But now I have a child, I can blame the child. Child broke the plate. Child ate the cookie. So Baruch Hashem, God took away my shame. I'm no longer going to be ashamed because I broke plates or I ate cookies. I can blame my kid. Now that is absurd on the surface. First of all, that's why Rachel Imenu wanted a kid. All this time she's chalishing, I want a child, if not I'm going to die. Why? I just can't take that people blame me for breaking plates. I need a child to blame. That was the reason she wanted a child. And it's not going to work. Nobody's going to believe that a 2-3-day-old child crept out of its crib, broke the plate, and ran back. Right? It's not going to work for at least a year. So now she's thinking, when she names the kid, a year from now, I'm going to have the benefit that in case I break a plate, I can blame my kid. That's why she named him that. And thirdly, what Jewish mother acts like that? Jewish mothers take the blame for everything their kids do. And she's blaming her kid for something she did? That's Rachel Imenu? So, what I think the idea is the following. Each one, let's take separately. Yosef li Hashem ben Acher. Well, yes, that's not nice. No, it is nice. Rachel Imenu wanted a child for the highest spiritual purposes. Not because she wanted a child, even for the reasons that, legitimate reasons, that any woman wants a child. She wanted them purely l'shem shamayim. How do I know? Because in next week's Sedra, Rachel Imenu is giving birth to her second child, and she's dying, hemorrhaging. That's probably what, she's bleeding, and chances are she could die. Now, the best thing in such a situation, somebody's losing blood, is to make sure they don't go into shock. Because once they go into shock, that's even the worst. So how do you keep a person from going into shock? One of the things to do is to keep them calm. Don't let them panic. So soothe them, calm them down, whatever. Now, if you were the midwife, and you have this woman hemorrhaging, and you're afraid she's going to go into shock, and you have to calm her down, everything's okay, don't panic, what would you tell her? Don't worry, you're going to pull through, you're going to dance at this child's chasana, everything's going to be okay. That's what I would say to the woman. What does the midwife say to her? Al tiri, don't worry, gam zeloch bein, it's a boy. What do you mean, don't worry, it's a boy? At this point, Rachel Imenu's life stands in the balance. She's losing blood fast. Who cares if it's a boy, a girl, or a giraffe? Right? Lamaisa, right now, that's not the issue, whether it's a boy or a girl. So why did the midwife say that? That's going to calm her down, yes. Because Rachel Imenu wanted a child so she could build Klal Yisrael. If it's a boy, it's another shevet. If it's not a boy, it's not another shevet. It's worth dying to bring another shevet into the world. It's not worth living if it's just another child. So Rachel Imenu wanted that child for the highest spiritual purposes. If that's the case, there's nothing wrong with wanting more. You never can be satisfied with a minimum when it comes to Ruchnias. You always have to want more. I want more and more and more. You can't be mistopic b'mur. Yosef li Hashem ben Acher. I'm not satisfied with one. I want two. It's for spiritual reasons, spiritual things. There's no limit. Can't be satisfied. So that explains that name. How about the other name? So first let's understand what she said, and then we'll understand the idea behind it. She didn't mean that she's going to blame the kid for breaking the plate. What she meant is the following. Till now, if I didn't have any children, I broke a plate in the kitchen, people blame me. There's no excuse. No excuse. How come she's not focused, not concentrated on what she's doing? But now I break a plate, you know what they'll say? Ah, she has her mind on her child. He probably was up all night. He was sick, right? She can't concentrate on what she's doing. She can't focus on the plates because her mind's on her child. Not that she'll blame the child, but that they'll use the child as an excuse to excuse her for what she did. So she benefited. She benefited. Rachel Imenu said the following. Let's put it into the context of this. You have to have aspirations. Great aspirations. And you always have to be not satisfied with a minimum, always want more. But that's a dangerous thing. Because if you always look to what you don't have and where you're not holding, you get frustrated. Right? I want to know all of Shas. So every day I keep saying I want to know all of Shas, and I don't know all of Shas today, and eventually I'm going to get frustrated. Says the Pasuk in Mishlei, Lev Chacham Liyamino V'Lev K'sil L'Shmolo. The wise man looks to the right, and the K'sil, the fool, looks to the left. Says the Vilna Gaon. What's the pshat? When you're learning a Sefer, what you've learned already is to your right. What you've yet to learn is to the left. The K'sil only looks at the left. How much there is more to learn. And he gives up, and he becomes frustrated, and he never learns anything. Just closes the Sefer. It's impossible. There's so much to learn. The wise person also wants to learn more and more. But every once in a while, he looks to the right to see what he's accomplished, and it gives him the encouragement to go on. You never can be satisfied with a minimum, but you have to be happy with what you have. There's no contradiction. I'm happy with what I accomplished. I'm not satisfied with it. I want more. But if you're not happy with what you accomplished, you don't realize you accomplished anything. Okay, I don't know all of Shas. I want to know all of Shas. But I didn't know Maseches Brachas 2 years ago. I didn't know how to look into a Gemara, which end is up, 3 years ago. So am I making headway? Yeah. Am I satisfied? No. Am I happy with what I've accomplished? Yes. That's what Rachel said. I'm never satisfied. I want another kid. Yosef Liv Hashem Ben Acher. I want another one. I'm not satisfied with one. But I'd be happy with this child, even for the smallest benefit it could bring me, of not having to be blamed for breaking plates. I'm not satisfied with that, but I'm happy with that too. Because if you're not happy with even the smallest accomplishment, then you'll never be happy. Because nothing will be big enough to make you happy. So you have to, on the one hand, be happy with the smallest accomplishment you made, but not be satisfied with it and want more. If you have a balance between those two things, you'll be able to use your aspirations in a positive way. If not, the aspirations will become frustrating and counterproductive. And lastly, let's go back to what we started with. Aziva Sadik min amakom osa roshim. We asked, when a tzaddik leaves a place, he takes away an impression. He doesn't make an impression. So I'll tell you, that's not the case. Before the tzaddik came to this city, there was no ziv, hod, and hoder. But nobody missed it. Because that was status quo. Then the tzaddik came to the city and he brought all this light and glory and beauty. Now he left, he took it with him. What are you going to tell me? That the city went back to the way it was in the beginning? No, there's a difference. Because in the beginning, nobody missed the ziv, hod, and hoder. Now that they had it, now they miss it. And they have an aspiration to get it back. That's osa roshim. It makes an impression. It gives them a desire to get it back. Memela, sometimes you can have aspirations and grow and reach a higher level. And then you lose it. And you fall back. Happens. People have aliyahs and yuridos. The malachim are going up and going down. So you lost your level, right? You were on a level, a great level. You were learning mamish without battling for 3 weeks. Finally reach a level of hasmada and you really feel great about yourself. And then something happens. You slept late one day and that's it. You fall back to where you were before. So what do you think? You're back where you started.
you didn't accomplish anything. No. You know how nice it felt to be on that higher level. So now when you went back to the level you were before, you have a reason to aspire to get back to that level because you had a taste of it. You know what it's like. Before you ever reached that level, you didn't have a taste what it's like, so you had no aspiration to reach it because you really didn't know how nice it was. So even the setbacks, even the times that you fall from the level that you reach can be very positive, can be osaroshim if you use that to double your aspiration to get back there, because now I experienced it, I know how nice it is, helps me get back. So it's not only the growth and the aspirations, if you have that ladder and you appreciate what you've accomplished, that are positive, even the setbacks, even the failures can be positive if you use that as a incentive, an impetus to try to get back and to use what you experience as an incentive to want to get back, get it back. That's also osaroshim, it also makes an impression. So this whole sedra, which is really the sedra of Golus, is based on aspirations, because that's what makes Klal Yisrael remain on the level they can be on, constantly dreaming towards more and more and more. In Golus, we don't have too much more than just the dream, or yinu kecholmi, right, during Golus. But if you don't dream and you don't have aspirations, then you'll never accomplish anything. And even in Golus, if you have those dreams and aspirations, then you can be successful.